For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Welcome, everyone. For those of you who are new, I'm Tygon Layton, the teacher at Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, and I'm very happy to have with us this morning Keiryu Lian Shi. Were you dragon?
I am, yes. Joyful Dragon.
Joyful Dragon. So she's at home here in Ancient Dragon Zen Gate. Keiryu Lian is a priest at the San Francisco Zen Center. She was ordained by Blanche Hartman, who was also my teacher as Shuso, or head monk at Tassajara. And Lian spent some time at Tassajara, but also trained in Japan and Vietnam, and I'm very happy to have you here visiting us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tyen, for the invitation. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm here in Chicago to visit my brother Eric, and also to meet a friend here from Houston, to a longtime friend that I've seen for a while. And I was asked to give a talk, and at first I was of course I'm honored to be asked to give a talk here, but I was a little worried because Tygon is well known as a scholar and Dogen expert, and I'm not what I would call the intellectual type. I am aware, though, and have read his teaching, and I always felt there was a lot of heart. So remembering that, and also remembering that our practice is to let go of thought, and also to really settle down into what's going on right now. And this weekend is actually the third anniversary of Eric's and my our sister Sue, death. So originally thinking about Sue, I have had this talk in my head, or the title of a talk in my head, for many years. When I was at Tassajara, there's a swimming pool, those of you who have been there, and I'm a swimmer, so I would swim, and as I swam, I would think, oh, this is like Zazen because of this and because of that, and I always felt like there's a talk in there. So originally I wanted to manifest that talk, but I will say that her death has really been the thing for me. And also this past weekend at San Francisco Zen Center was the 50th anniversary of the corporation of Zen Center. So many people came, and there was a lot of reminiscing and context about Suzuki Roshi, including his death. So I want to start with case 55 from the Blue Cliff Record. It goes like this. Monk Zengen once accompanied his teacher, Dogo, on a condolence call to a family funeral. When they arrived, he wrapped the coffin and said, "Alive or dead?" Dogo said, "I won't say alive, I won't say dead." Zengen, the student, demanded, "Why won't you say?" Dogo repeated, "I won't say, I won't say." On their way back home, Zengen cried, "Tell me right now, teacher, alive or dead. If you don't, I will hit you." Master Dogo said, "You may hit me, but I won't say." Zengen hit him. After Dogo passed away, Zengen went to see Dogo's successor, Sekiso, told him the story, and asked for guidance. Sekiso said, "I won't say alive, I won't say dead." Zengen said, why won't you say? And Sekiso repeated, I won't say, I won't say. At this time, Zengen immediately realized it. So this is a koan, again, from the Blue Cliff Record. And our way of practicing with koan in our tradition, or as I learned it, is not so much a formal way in which you come and tell your answer to a teacher, but to hold it and see what arises for you, what you can take from it, or what how you meet the koan whenever you remember to bring it forth. So obviously you can read this koan as about the big question of life and death. And it's a legit, important question. So Zengen questioned alive or dead. Could be that he's saying, tell me what is life and what is dead. What is living and what is dying? Perhaps even what is a Zen life, an awakened life, an alive life, and what is not a Zen life? Mm-hmm. Master Dogo, when he says, I won't say, is really how can he tell you what is alive and what is dead? Only each of us can say what is alive in us and what is dead for us. So what is it? How do you know what is alive and what is dead? I remember when I first heard this koan at Tassajara, what I took away from it then is that in each moment, how do I meet it? Alive or dead? Do I meet a moment, a situation, a person with openness or with tightness and contraction? And we see it in our life. We can see it all the time. For instance, yesterday I was at the Art Institute, spent hours in there, and at one point, this woman bumped into me, and I turned and kind of, because I'm in front of the painting, it's my space. And she was like, oh, something's falling out of your pocket, right? And so then I was like, oh, thank you. So it's just, a little example, but it's an example of how something calls our attention, and I often go, what is it? In a very contracted, tense way. Like, what do you want of me? And so, for me, when I remember to bring forth the question, how is it that when I meet things, I can see what is my response? So, this koan can be used as a guide as we go through our daily life, either on the cushion or off. We ask ourselves, alive or dead? I'm here meeting this experience, this situation, this person, and am I aware whether it's bringing me more a sense of aliveness or more of a sense of deadness? Am I meeting it with a sense of openness or close? And by that I also mean really physically, you can really sense that. Because when we're open and relaxed, our body will also tend to relax. So that's a good place to go bring the question to. And in some ways you can see that really well in Sishin. The first 3 or 4 days of Sishin, you spend all your time trying to figure out how to manage your pain. And usually in those first 3 or 4 days, it's physical pain. Be it my ankle feels like it's ready to fall off, or, it's too hot, or it's too cold. I had a friend at Tassajara where she said, Sashin is you just, you know, when do I shit, when do I eat, and when do, you know, I sleep? And you kind of spend all your time trying to figure out when you can do all that, as opposed to just being where you are, be it shitting, sleeping, or eating, right, or sitting. So we spend a lot of our time, you know, kind of contracting in our sense of wanting things to be different. And we can really feel that in our body. And as a practice, we can then bring our intention of how we want to respond, how we want to meet these moments and situations and people. So if my intention is to be open, say, then how do I meet it with openness, with ease? So it's been a great tool for me applying this koan in this way, on the cushion and in everyday life. I ask myself as often as I can remember, alive or dead? Alive or dead? And of course, you can have guidance from your teacher, your Sangha members, friends, family, strangers, museums, maybe even your enemies. But no one really can answer for you what is alive or dead for you. Only you can answer it for yourself. Only you can ask the question and meet perhaps the answer in each moment. So Dogo, Master Dogo's I won't say, can be read as it's because he can't tell you. Tell us what is alive or what is dead for each of us. And perhaps he also won't say, because the question, how we phrase the question, is just as important. And in phrasing it that way, we're putting in a context of dualism. And in the end, or in the broader sense, if we are approaching life from a dualistic point of view, with questions such as alive or dead, then we set up a situation in which we aren't approaching it with a way which can actually free us. So Dogo's, I won't say, is perhaps from the perspective of the, what's called the birthless and the deathless. So you may say, well, what is birthless and deathless? There is no, if we think of our life, the way we perceive our life, and situation as things are born and things die. They come and they go. We even say they arise and they cease. And at times, obviously, we have to speak this way. But in reality, things just are. Each moment is in itself. Things are happening, happening, happening. In fact, this friend that I met, she's a geologist and very scientific. That's why she's, well, for her, that's why she's not religious in any way. And I remember when I first started all this, she said, you know, we were talking about this context, and she said, well, you know, there are no waves in the ocean. We perceive an arising and a falling, but really it's just particles and particles. Right? So, and in fact, in physics, this is the truth. So we really don't know what is born or what is die. I mean, we put words to it, but do we really know what that is? In a way, we're just aware, or we just live in being. John Dido Laurie, in a commentary on this koan said, when Zengen asked, alive or dead, he said, he is caught between two mountains. Being squeezed between two peaks is like putting ourselves between a rock and a hard place. No wonder we feel pinched and tight and contracted. So as long as we think about the two peaks, you know, this thing that's alive or dead, and in some ways, these are peaks for us because these are moments in which we're kind of at a loss. Our reality has just, we don't know what to do about it, so it is a point in which we tend, most of us, to contract. So we want to hear, we want to know what the answer is because we're at dis-ease. We don't like contraction usually. So Dogos, I won't say, in this context, is more like, no, I'm not going to give you something to hang on to that still places you in duality. Giving you an answer that is framed within duality cures the symptoms, your dis-ease, your I don't like it, but not the disease itself. And it's interesting that from this point of view of non-duality, then the second part of the koan can take on a different meaning. The first way we can see is when Zengen says, tell me right now, teacher, alive or dead. If you don't, I will hit you. In the first way, this reading is, you could see as his zeal and for practice and really just wanting to know. His searching. But in the second way of thinking about it, as Laurie says in his footnote on this koan, he says separation, duality, right, always breeds confrontation. Right? Notice it's alive or dead. There's no in between. But in fact, we, most of us, live in the valley of the peaks. Well, that's where we spend most of our time. But we keep looking up to the peaks and thinking we should be up there. So as long as we live in duality, then there is distinction and separation, and there will be confrontation. If there's a you and there's a me, at some point we will disagree, perhaps what is alive and what is dead. And if our disagreement gets strong enough, if what we think something means or is important enough to us, then there might even arise a fight. When there's a wrong and a right, there could even be war. That's interesting, I'm going to divert a little here. I've read a while back that Charlotte Joko Beck says that for the spiritual person, the opposite of injustice is not justice. Or excuse me, the solution or the application or how you can approach injustice. Injustice is not justice, but compassion. And just this past weekend, I think this part is streamlined too, but Richard Baker, in the question and answer afterwards, after the talk, someone asked him towards the end, if you want to go searching for it, talk to us about forgiveness. And he said, well, I should know something about that, shouldn't I? And then he paused for a while, and it seemed to me that, you know, he had a moment of emotion. And he said, you know, that for me, when he stressed that, think twice. And so for me, for many years, I'm paraphrasing, by the way, I thought about, well, what is justice? What is justice? And until I could set aside justice and found compassion for myself, then I could really work through the pain and cause, right, Zen Center. So it was like teaching from Charlotte Jokelbach playing out for me. So Zengen's "I'll hit you" is a response to his frustration that he can't get an answer to his, and perhaps for ourselves, for most of us, usual sense of separation or dualism, which again often leads to confrontation, internally or externally. And Dogo's saying, "You may hit me, but I won't say," comes from his infinite kindness and the perspective of oneness and a sense of intimacy. With kindness, he won't give into dualistic explanation or framing, dualistic framing. So then the end of the koan, when Zengen goes to Sekiso, and the same format happens, yet this time, Zengen becomes enlightened. So perhaps, you know, we don't know how long it was after that his master died and then he went to Sekiso, but there's some time and therefore some practice. So perhaps this time, Zengen understands the "I won't say" is an answer that points him towards non-duality. An answer that isn't about, is it me that's open in a situation or closed in a situation? An answer that isn't about me being alive in a situation or dead in a situation. There's just what is. When I'm open, I'm open. And when I'm closed, I'm closed. That's all, you know. There's no comparison, no duality. Openness is not a forever state, nor is closeness. Because how many of you, when I said, when you meet a situation, you can ask yourself, alive or dead? How many of you thought, "Oh, I should be alive, you know, alive, that's where I'm going for. If I practice enough, I should meet that woman at the museum with, 'Oh, how can I help you?' Right? That's how I should be if I'm a good practitioner, right?" But in fact, you know, our life is, we respond how we respond, sometimes with openness, and sometimes with contraction. If you go outside and it's raining, probably most of us would go, "Shit, where's my umbrella?" Right? Most of us would go, "Oh, how lovely," and just walk into the rain. So we often contract, and that's our life, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's just what it is. So can we meet, "Shit, where's my umbrella?" with, "Oh yeah, that's what it is." And then, is this a state? Note the state, and then you can also bring intention, but it's really just noting or being aware of what is happening right now. Right? So similar to Zengen, we want to have an answer how we can be alive. Right? Not only what is what, but so that we can know which one we want to be or should be. Now, this doesn't mean that to have understood or solved or penetrated the koan mean that I don't need to ask the question, alive or dead? Am I alive in this? Am I dead in this? What is life and what is death? What is it that's living and what is it? What would it be like in dying? It's not that we shouldn't, mind you, have the question or perhaps even hear an answer. It is to have the question and to acknowledge meeting an answer, yet know that there's more than just this answer or just this way of phrasing the question. Maybe I won't say. It's more like the I can't say because it can't be answered by words and concepts. Or I won't say is it because it can't. Maybe it's like I won't speak to that because there's not a way to do that in words or concept to define it. So alive or dead? Can we hold the question? Can we wait for an answer to arise, even one we may not understand right now? You know, when I thought about Sue, I was completely surprised. I actually just broke down crying, and I was really surprised because it's been 3 years. Richard Baker was talking about things that Suzuki Roshi said to him, that it's taken him 30, 40 years to, what the word he used, which I really appreciate, is incubate. This not understanding or thinking you had an understanding and then finding another understanding. So one of the stories that he said, I think speaks to this. So you might want to open your eyes and look at me because it's not all verbal. So Suzuki Roshi died at 300 Page in the building where he was giving the talk, and on December 4th, 1971. And he said, this is Richard Baker. So shortly before he died, I stood at the foot of his bed. I didn't know what to do. I'd hope for another 10 years with him, at least. I said to him, where will I meet you? And this is Richard Baker saying this to Suzuki Roshi. Again, Richard Baker speaking. He was in his rakusu in his bed. And he took out his hands from under the covers. Richard Baker made a show and made a circle in the air and bowed. And this, again, is Richard Baker. So this circle in the air is, he was talking about different legacy of Suzuki Roshi. So the circle in the air is also Suzuki Roshi's legacy. And our practice, our form and emptiness, form and openness, openness and form. He said, keep opening up each appearance. Thank you for your attention. So we have time for questions, answers, comments. I take challenges too. Whatever arises.
Thank you very much for a wonderful talk, Kiryu. So please, comments, questions, challenges. Kiryu, alive or dead?
I don't know.
Thank you so much for a wonderful talk, and my comment slash question I don't think really does it justice, but I was just sort of having the response when you were talking in just this last moment about koans and understanding koans and staying alive, and I think I just wanted to sort of say that I have always found that to be peculiar, that we think that there is, you know, sort of an answer to a koan or that there's a meaning to it. And yet, when I think about the things that I've experienced over my life, just as you're talking about Baker Roshi, things that I understand at this point in my life are really just part of the circumstances at this point in my life. learnings from it in the past. And so I think about, you know, things that I understand now differently than I understood maybe 20 years ago, and things that I'll understand in a different way. Not always a better way, you know? But just the way, and I guess I wondered if that was, you know, just sort of one way of continuing to, that everything is alive. Even things that, moments that seem dead are also alive.
I wouldn't necessarily say so. I mean, I don't think we can say it's all alive, right? Because I don't really know what dead is, right? When you die, really, most of us, I don't know what dead is. So I don't think I can say that it's all alive. Because I think there are moments when there's certain kinds of... I guess more it's like, is it useful to summarize it as? Not that you shouldn't, I'm just, for me, I don't know whether it'd be useful to even summarize it as one or the other. But just what is it? Yes.
Thank you so much for your time.
Actually, I don't know your Dharma name. I know Nancy, so if you say your name, that'd be great.
My name is Josh.
Josh.
And everything's Toto, I guess. So, Asian and Durian, I just spent some time at Mukyoji, about 5 hours away. It's really strange, because we just studied the Holy Creed. We're studying the Shoji, Shoji.
Uh-huh.
I'm in my so very good talk this time. Another reason, my father passed away 5 weeks ago Saturday. So at the end of our time at Hokkyoji, we were able to ask a question about life and death. And each teacher, there were five teachers, which was interesting. Each teacher would respond to a question I asked. And it was similar to just, my question was, you know, I've been thinking a lot about like what his last moment was. And I, after discussing Shoji a lot, I postulated that possibly there was no moment where you could say he was dead. Maybe it was, I asked him if that was correct. And each teacher gave a fair answer, but Dokai was the abbot there. He had an answer that really resonated with me, and he discussed his own father's death. And then the only thing he said after that was, the question is with me also. Mm-hmm. And that's really resonated. But,
I have to say, you know, these days I heard a talk from Gil Fronsdale, and actually it was a class at Tassajara on self and no self, or not self. And in the question and answer part, which I often find the most interesting part about in the Dharma event, is that a lot of people kept saying, oh, isn't it like this, or isn't this our practice? And he would frame things often as, well, is that useful to ask me? You know, not like to ask me that, but that question, is it useful? And he keeps saying, you know, the Buddha was very practical. He wouldn't answer certain questions like, is there non-self, or as in no self, right? So, it just has really stuck with me, maybe, you know, not as a koan so much, but often I go, well, is that useful in my train of thought? Or so, as practice, I keep trying to, you know, I think for me, who tends to have ideals, that it helps me to get grounded, like, is it useful? Is it useful? Especially right here and now, is it useful? And useful very specifically to suffering or not suffering. Mm-hmm.
say for myself that many things you said were very useful.
Thank you.
Just not to think it's either alive or dead, or to think we should be alive as opposed to dead. Or anyway, many things you said were very useful. And just holding this question, I have this question too. And also, sometimes it's useful just to sit silently to see if someone else has some question or comment or response or challenge.
I think I forgot to say in my beginning, the reason I thought about swimming Zazen is just when I was first adopted in 73, we went to Thailand, and our sister Sue had come for that summer, and I almost drowned, and so she took it upon herself to teach me how to swim. So that's where the connection, I think I forgot to say that in the beginning.
I work in hospice, and so the alive and dead, I'm just sort of still sitting. I think in being with hundreds, if not thousands at this point, people dying, I would still say, even in being with somebody, there are occasions still when somebody actually, quote, dies in the physical sense, whatever. There have been moments where I cannot answer. Very few, but a few where I just go, are they alive or are they dead? And it just struck me as sort of sitting with that question. And I'm not even sure even when somebody dies is the certainty of what's alive and what's dead, but just those, there have been some sincerely some moments in sitting with people where I'm not sure. And, you know, and then having to just sit with that or sit with the family in that. You know, in that space in between the two peaks as you speak. It's more, not so much a question, it's more a comment.
Yeah. You know, I work as a social worker on the weekdays, and I work in a low-income senior housing site that a portion of the people were chronically homeless before they moved in. And just this past Monday, someone abandoned his unit, which has never happened in my 5 years there. And it's rare, and he had always said when things happen, he's an alcoholic and he has some access to issues, personality issues. And so it was, in a way, he had used it as a threat whenever things were difficult after a incident in which he was drunk and threaten somebody or something, you know, and then was faced with a letter of some kind. And so, you know, while he had said, well, I'm going to go back on the street often, when it happened, you know, it was a moment like, you know, he's not there anymore, and each day I kind of look for him still. So, you know, dead and alive isn't just the literal dead and alive, but on a certain level, you know, I worry about him being on the street, and he's not alive on a daily basis. Or that's why, you know, it's a whenever we can be, where do our mind kind of struggles with what is reality, in a way you could say, what is the question is, what is my reality at this moment?
I was on the retreat, and when Tony O'Connor was talking about Shoji, she mentioned this very good one, and she brought forth the idea that the corpse in the casket that was being knocked down by the teacher is a living corpse, is this thing that is corpse. And on top of that, I don't know if it's from Shobo Genzo or Genzo Kwan with the idea of firewood turning to ash after it's burnt. And the firewood says, I'm not ash. And the ash says, I'm not firewood. And it's just this idea of just this, how holy.
I think similar to like we tend to go, is it alive or is it dead? But mostly we live in between the peaks, right? So.
Just following up on Melinda, in my early years at San Francisco Zen Center, I have never been with someone just at the moment they die, but many times back then I sat with people who had just died the first day or two or three, and many of us had, I don't know what to call it, sensation, a sense that something was still there. The body dies, and part of the Zen funeral ceremony is to sit with the body for 3 days, because there's some sense that the first day or two and maybe even three, something is there around the body. I don't know, you know, I don't know what that is. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I asked, you know, because we also have the tradition that after 49 days if we do another memorial.
Yes.
And I asked Blanche recently, and she said she thought it was because of the idea in Buddhism, the bardo stays 49 days before transition. So, but that's a period of like alive or dead. Yeah,
that idea in Japanese Buddhism is very similar to the Tibetan Book of the Dead. Yes, alive or dead. Don't know.
And in some ways, I remember when I was at my mother's deathbed, you know, she had cancer. Not my biological mother, my adopted mother. And she was a nurse, and our dad was a doctor. So she was going to die at home, hospice, but at a certain point she had a lot of pain and she actually didn't want my father to deal with it, you know, just so she went to hospital. And the way that I often think about those 6 days in the hospital was the first 3 days we were crying because she was dying, and then the second 3 days we were crying because she was suffering so much. We wanted her to die, but it was just like, it's okay, let go. So I think, you know, maybe you won't say, because it's like, are you asking for yourself? So you're always, you know, like when someone's dying, I have a lot of like me, you know, I'm worried for her suffering, or somehow it's related to me. And maybe this is just coming up for me, maybe not answering is going, who are you asking for?
Yeah.
You know, kind of throwing it back to hear it for yourself, like, is it really about the big question, or is it just I'm uncomfortable here, or I'm suffering because someone's suffering, so I just want an answer.
Well, thank you very much. As it says on the Han outside, life and death is the great matter. And I appreciate your coming, and it's very useful to open this up from your perspective for us. So thank you very much.
Thank you.